usually introduces me by mentioning all the Frank Meyer accolades in the introduction to his works on Frank Meyer. I'm the only one still alive. In any event, it is good to be here, and John is right. You know, I've written 8 books, thousands of articles, professor several places. Nobody cares about that. The only thing they care about is that I was Ronald Reagan's head of the civil service for 4 years. And I was called a lot worse names than the ones John mentioned. Reagan called, he said, I got a job for you. I said, what is it? He said, director the Office of Personnel Management, OPM. My son used to call it opium. I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, well, I want you to cut non-defense employment by 100,000. I want you to reduce their bloated benefits, and I want you to make them work harder. I said, thanks a lot. Can make a lot of friends in this job. I always remember what Harry Truman said about doing a tough job in Washington. If you need a friend in Washington, buy a dog. So I bought 2 of them to be on the safe side. And the crazy thing is we did, in fact, reduce by 100,000. I did directly save $6.3 billion, which is about $60 billion in today's term, almost real money. And we even did make them work harder for a while. We put in a pay-for-performance system for senior executives and the mid-level managers. But, of course, it wasn't me. It was the guy who, when I said this was a funny job for me to have as kind of a libertarian conservative to be the chief bureaucrat of the government, he said, well, I got a good sense of humor. And he did have a good sense of humor, but he even had a better sense of vision and mission. And that's, with his character, what made him one of the great, great people of the 20th century. And that vision was fusionism. In fact, he wrote probably the best short explanation of fusionism of anybody. He came to the Conservative Political Action Committee a couple of months after he became president. It was the first time he talked to a conservative audience, and back in those days, the media didn't pay any attention, so a big conservative gathering, you could talk like it was your best friend and didn't care if it was on the first page. It wouldn't get on the first page. He started talking about the intellectual leaders who shaped our thought, and he mentioned Russell Kirk, Friedrich Hayek, Henry Hazlitt, Milton Friedman, James Burnham, Ludwig von Mises, all who have been mentioned during this conference, I might say. But he only talked at length about one person. Said another one of these great thinkers, Frank Meyer, pulled himself from the clutches of the communist god that failed, and then in his writing fashioned a vigorous new synthesis of traditional and libertarian thought, a synthesis that is today recognized as modern conservatism. It was Frank Meyer who reminded us that the robust individualism of the American experience was part of the deeper current of Western learning and culture. He pointed out that a respectful law, an appreciation for tradition, and a regard for the social consensus that gives stability to our public and private institutions, these civilized ideas must still motivate us, even as we seek new economic prosperity based on reducing government interference in the marketplace. You know, that's pretty profound, especially for a politician. And particularly mentioning this idea of synthesis, When I've mentioned this in the early days to many people, they say, well, Reagan didn't have time to do stuff like that. He got one of his speechwriters to write that for him. Well, I personally interviewed all of his speechwriters in those days, and I asked them, how did you sneak Reagan's idea of synthesis into a major speech? And they all looked at me like I had three heads. They didn't know synthesis. That was Reagan that put that in there and nobody else, because he really understood it. He had read all those people, Robert Novak, the great journalist, told me he never had a lot of respect for Reagan. He's so folksy and everything like that. But he got to interview him like in the first week or so that he was president, and he was in there, and Reagan kept referring to people, philosophers and people he didn't even know about. He remembered one of them was named Bizdiat. So he said, I better go out and look this guy up. Well, he looked up and he read Bizdiat's The Law. And he said, this was absolutely relevant to everything Ronald Reagan said. He said, I changed my mind about that guy immediately overnight. He understood that, and he did. And again, that idea of synthesis is the central. You know, fusionism. Meyer never liked the term. Nobody really liked the term. Synthesis was the right word. Now, the only problem with that is it's bad enough to call yourself a fusionist. You're going to call yourself a synthesis? Yeah, it doesn't work. Actually, as Brandon said, Meyer liked the term tension better. Because Brandon is absolutely right. If there's one thing that fusionism is not, contrary to how most people understand it, is not a blending. It's a tension constantly in these principles of freedom and tradition against each other, never resolving that conflict and forcing the only thing that can resolve that conflict to resolve that conflict, and that is the individual human being. It's forced into resolving that conflict because something happened. And I just wrote a review for the Law and Liberty blog on a new book by an Oxford professor named Larry Seedentop called Inventing the Individual. When was the individual invented? This guy goes back through all human history. He finds the first person that talks about the individual being the major social actor as opposed to the family or the tribe or nation, St. Paul, maybe Jesus, but St. Paul. This whole idea of individualism comes out of a particular tradition. As Meyer points out, it has seeds in Athens and Jerusalem, both of them suppressed by power, but somehow surviving through this little group that, with St. Paul, what is he doing? He's reconciling Greek and Jerusalem. We are neither Jew or Greek. We are something new, a new font of power. That whereas the family or tribe or nation made the decisions previously, now it's up to this individual. Those who want to blame individualism, blame it on Christianity. All right, they're the ones who did it. They're the ones responsible. If you don't like them, that's the way you carry it out. The unresolved tension is what turned Western civilization into the most creative And it starts pretty early. The UN figures on economic growth show the first spurt in Western productivity is around the year 1000. We have a very different tradition. It's not tradition that we support with freedom. It's Western tradition that we support with freedom. It built up a particular set of institutions and ideals. Could be accepted for religious reason, could be accepted for rational reasons, but they developed historically. They weren't something that came down from a mountain. The problem is that we've grown far away. In fact, the first thing we did after the Constitution, which after the Magna Carta is founding doctrine of our immediate American situation. Ever since, we started to fix it, right? Right from the beginning. It was pretty clear what functions the federal government's supposed to have and everything else supposed to be state and local, but you know, right from the Whig starting the national improvements, we know better than this system. We insisted on, instead of accepting this synthetic tension between freedom and tradition, we're going to fix it. We're going to create some utopian ideological system to replace it. I mean, this idea that these things are in tension, that it's not clear whether freedom is always first or tradition is always first or any combination of that, we're going to fix this and put that tension back together again. And so we had first the divine right of kings and the French revolutionaries, nationalists, explosions in 19th century Europe, Nazism, communism, socialism, progressivism. We're all going to put together a single coherent utopian rationalism that's going to replace it. Fortunately, most of them are dead. One remains supreme, progressivism, which is our unique American form of this utopianism. And of course, it was the greatest intellectual since the founders, Woodrow Wilson, who looked at America after going to Prussia and finding Prussia works. Prussia has a social security system. It has a health system, as an educational system that created a welfare state. Hey, that works over there. Why? Well, they got a king and a chancellor. When they decide to do it, they do it. The problem with America is we have all this power divided up all over the place, national and state, executive, judicial, president, congressional, whatever I missed there. We're going to fix it. And they did fix it, right? This government runs precisely under progressive principles. Hand all power over to the experts, and they're going to solve the problem. Well, didn't quite work, did it? Hayek calls progressivism a superstition. He says in future generations, they're going to look back at the 20th century and they're going to be amazed that this superstition of phony scientific knowledge by experts. They're not going to believe that we believed it. I think our job really is to fight those superstitions and return, as Hayek says, who is a fusionist too, by the way, the custom, free means, and decentralization is what he said. Well, let's talk about fusionism's future, which is the subject of this, and I'll end up quickly here. Nobody likes the term fusionism. As I mentioned, Meyer really didn't like it. He was forced to because it was put on him, and it's better than, again, synthetic or even tensionist, or I guess. So it stuck. It took William Buckley 20 years to accept that term as an acceptable one. And, of course, Brent Brozell at National Review, where all of this developed. By the way, it was not planned. It was developed there. They kind of reinvented Western civilization there without knowing it. Nobody likes it. In fact, I've been taking very close notes of this conference here, and except for David and Frank, almost everybody used this central organizing tendency of some kind of tension between central values of our civilization, almost every one of them. Whether they would consider themselves a fusionist, I would assume most would not. I'm reviewing a new book. It's by a young, very bright guy, sharp book, talking about this great new idea of unifying libertarianism and traditionalism. Now, the strange thing about it, he works at National Review, where this was invented 50 years ago. You know, there's something about this fusionism. You can't beat it down no matter how bad it is. It keeps coming up through the cracks of the cement of civilization. It's clumsy, but it's the center of our civilization. And if our civilization is going to survive, it's got to survive, and that's your job as far as I'm concerned. Be passionate for both liberty and tradition. Thanks for having me.